KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, today has been declared a day of action for all segments of public education in California. The idea behind it, to show a unified response to state cuts from education budgets. What exactly can we expect from the actions on this day of action, and what will be the impact? We'll hear from a couple of education reporters who've been following events, and during the course of the hour, we'll also hear from a number of voices of those involved in marches, demonstrations, sit-ins, and teach-ins. Forum is next in an hour, which will include your calls, emails, and online postings after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. With widespread concern over deep cuts from education and fee increases, students and educators from all levels of education throughout the state, as well as union members, are demonstrating their concern and displeasure today, sending a message in a day of action that is intended to draw attention to the issue of the lack of funding for education in California. And in this Forum hour, we're going to look at what is behind this day of action and what the anticipated and hoped-for results are likely to be. We'll be checking in throughout the hour with a number of people who are in different positions, in fact, at different institutions. And we just got word that at Santa Cruz, they are advising not to go on the campus because there apparently was an incident there. With us in studio is Jill Tucker, who's education writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. And good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
And you just got some news. I mean, this is actually breaking news.
Literally.
And not good news.
Not good news. No, just literally moments ago, we found out, the state found out that it did not make the list of finalists for the Race to the Top funds coming out of the Obama administration. This is the first round. There were 16 state finalists, including Washington, D.C., out of 40 that submitted applications. California was looking forward to that $700, $800, $900, maybe $1 billion that could have come out of this money. Now they're going to have to apply again in June and keep their fingers crossed. But this was a big chunk of change that they will not be seeing this year, and that is a huge disappointment.
It is disappointing indeed. Again, Jill Tucker is education writer of the San Francisco Chronicle. Lisa Krieger is higher education reporter with the San Jose Mercury News. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you with us as well. And I was just looking at an article that you did that really ought to, we're talking about money here and money not coming in, but you're saying essentially that maybe the protesters out there ought to know this. Experts are saying California's higher education fee hikes actually help the poor.
It does. About a third of the fee hikes that the students are experiencing now will be plowed back into financial aid. We're moving to a high tuition, high aid model, so that tuition is rising. On the other hand, financial aid and support is rising as well. And this is an effort to preserve access to the university from students who are eligible but can't afford it.
I want to get an overview from both you and Jill about what's actually happening. Let's talk about higher education first. Lisa, give us a picture.
Yeah, essentially what's behind the protest is that students are paying a larger share of their educational costs, and they perceive that they're getting less. And I think underlying that, there's a volatility and an unpredictability of their fees. So it's really hard for families to predict and budget for fee increases. The state used to have a very explicit fee policy between about 86 and 96, and what this said was that fee increases should be gradual and moderate and predictable. But that's expired, and since then there's been a lot of volatility because decisions are really made in response to the state's fiscal condition, which gets to my second point, and that is the state's contribution to funding is declining, and that's because other priorities are claiming a larger share of the budget, like corrections and social services and public health. And a lot of the general fund budget's already locked up by mandates to other programs that are imposed by ballot measures and court rulings and other things, so that when times get tight, which is what we're in the middle of now, a lot of the unprotected programs, like higher ed, are one of the few places to cut. So a much smaller percent of the general fund is now going toward higher education now than it was back in, say, 80 or 85. So the university only has two places to get funding. One's the state, and that money's not there, and the other is the students. So when the state's cut back, the students really have to backfill. And that's what's going on now. The schools do have an ironclad promise to accept everyone who's eligible. So So what they're doing is boosting tuition to help those who can't pay to keep the doors open, and also to support some of the educational programs and social services that have really been hit because of the decline in state funding.
Let's talk about the action today. I mean, most of it is for a heightening or the desire to bring a heightening of public awareness for the need of support. But who's this aimed at? Is this aimed at the governor, the legislature, individual administrations, as higher ed?
Very good question. I presume it's the governor and the legislature. All that being said, since there was an action earlier in the week in Sacramento, and that's a wonderful thing, here on campus, frankly, they're preaching to the choir. I mean, the faculty know that there isn't money. The faculty are hurting because there's not money. I don't know how effective destruction, particularly on campuses, will be in moving things forward.
Again, Lisa Krieger with us by phone as higher education reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. Akasha Perez is a student activist and an intern at the California Faculty Association and is at San Francisco State. I should mention, by the way, that there's expectation of millions turning out around the state for this day of action. Akasha, good morning to you. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Can you give us a sense specifically what's going on over at San Francisco State?
Right now in San Francisco State, we have the professors and lecturers gearing up for a picket line to start at 10. But students have organized individual picket lines around the building right now. And they're planning, they've invited high schools to come in for teach-ins about the budget and how it's affecting them and how to get into college, stuff like that.
And these picket lines are set to go on throughout the day or just this morning, or what's the timeline?
The CFA picket line, which is on 19th and Holloway, will be going on between 10 and 12:30. The picket lines that were organized by the students in front of the buildings are set to go on all day.
And is there a sense that this is being directed toward legislators, or is it directed toward California population in general, citizens of California, whom?
I feel like it's directed at legislators, definitely, but more than that, I think it's directed at the general population of California. This is more of a rally cry for a lot of students to try to motivate people to take part.
Take part as far as bringing what kind of changes? What are your main concerns here?
The main concerns that I have is that legislation that would fund higher education isn't being supported enough, and it keeps getting delayed, like AB 656, which would tax oil extraction to pay for higher education. These things have been delayed so many times, and the fees keep going up and are scheduled to go up again next year. These are fees that we can't afford to pay.
Akasha Perez with us from San Francisco State. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. It'll be certainly a lively day. In fact, Jill Tucker, as I said, is with us here. K-12 wants to be heard here as well. Talk about their concerns and the involvement of K-12 throughout the state as you see it.
Well, K-12 is feeling in the classrooms almost a panic right now, parents and teachers. They're seeing class sizes increased, which is a huge program that parents and teachers absolutely love. And they're seeing teacher salaries cuts. They're seeing programs that what little was left of art or music or gifted programs are getting whittled away. And they're feeling that the education that their children are getting is just decreasing and decreasing within these public schools. And it's reaching a crisis situation, a tipping point.
What are we going to see today then?
We are seeing children in front of schools this morning, parents and teachers. We are seeing everything from field trips, quote-unquote field trips, to legislators' offices, schools letting out early. They're not supposed to be doing these things, but they're doing it anyway. And then they'll be joining the big massive rally in San Francisco, for example, at Civic Center this afternoon. A lot of the K-12 actions are happening after school, although high school students and others are sneaking out of school today to participate in many of these actions that are going on.
Is it safe to say that we're talking, although, you know, the concern is with the cutbacks and the lack, I mean, here in San Francisco, for example, there's a $113 million budget gap, but just in general, the sense of different people with different agendas?
Between the K-12 and the higher ed, I think they all feel like they're on the same team. That while the K-12 world isn't worried about the fee increases that the students are experiencing at the higher education level, they are worried about the cuts in general that are requiring the local schools to either raise parcel taxes or have parents raise money, which is very similar to the fee increases that you're seeing. It's the only way for them to sort of make do in these hard budget times. And they're frustrated that the governor is still taking a very strong no tax increase stand, which means basically that there is not going to be any increased revenue, that they're going to have to make do somehow. And they've been trying to make do for several years, and they're at the point where they're seeing class sizes of 30 and above and no programs and teachers laid off, and they're at this point at the end of their rope. And you're starting to see really massive amounts of parents that were inactive before. These aren't just the activist parents. These are the teachers and families that have never participated before, that are coming out to the town hall meetings like San Francisco had, or these marches in front of schools.
Yeah, I was struck by that when we were at a town hall meeting last week in Marina Middle School, and there were a lot of people who said, this is the first time I've been involved in anything like this. Jill Tucker, again, is education writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Colby Zintel is president of the PTA at Dianne Feinstein Elementary School in San Francisco, under 500 kids roughly in the Sunset, and is joining us by phone. And Colby Zintel, can you give us a sense of you're sort of our reporter here. What are we seeing?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on. I'd like to echo what Jill just said. I mean, we are seeing a lot of activism in our community, both with the teachers and the parents. And today we are going to walk out. We leave an hour early, and we are going to have a protest around our school. And then more than half of our families, our parents, our children, our teachers, are going to get on the Muni and go downtown and make our voices heard.
What do you hope the effect of this will be, realistically?
Realistically, I mean, we need more funding, and we need to make the city and the state aware of that. And we, you know, we're having a coordinated effort. We're hoping to get behind a parcel tax. You know, we're trying to, you know, get parents involved with the Close the Loophole Prop 13 legislation. You know, we're working on a bunch of different efforts, but today our point is we're feeling this in the classroom. Our kids are being affected, and we need to be heard. So today it's all about yelling and screaming and telling them that we really need help.
Your school's fairly new. I mean, it's what, 4 years old?
So our school is 4 years old, and we have a lot of new teachers. And one of the things that is going to just devastate our community is the layoffs, the teacher layoffs. We're expecting as high as 50% of our teachers are going to get laid off. And we'll get new teachers. We're losing positions, but personnel. We're losing people. And those are the people that we depend on to build our community. So that's devastating for us.
We're also talking about schools that are getting deeper cuts throughout San Francisco, are they not?
Absolutely. I mean, Jill told me yesterday there's a school on the east side of the city that's going to lose 75-80% of their teachers. How do you recover from something like that?
Well, that's one of the questions that I think you and others want to be heard here in Sacramento and throughout the state. Colby Zintel, again, is president of PTA Dianne Feinstein Elementary School. And are you inviting people to join you in this march?
Absolutely. I mean, we'll be marching around 19th Avenue at Larson Park, the kids, the parents, the community members, a couple hundred people. You'll see our signs. Honk for us if you see us. And then we'll go down. We're all wearing our red T-shirts saying, you know, save our schools now. Our kids can't wait. You know, you don't get another chance at first grade, second grade. And with class sizes at 30, you know, some of these kids are just going to fall through the cracks.
Well, I thank you for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thanks very
much. Appreciate your being with us. And I should mention just a way for full disclosure here that as many people know, I'm a faculty member at San Francisco State, and so is executive producer Raul Ramirez. I wanted to read a statement by Mark Udoff, who is, of course, president of UC, University of California, who writes, "My heart and my support are with everybody and anybody who wants to stand up for public education. I salute those who are making themselves heard today in a peaceful manner on behalf of a great cause. Our public institutions, from kindergarten to the doctoral level, have shaped our nation's course and are an essential piece of the American fabric. Here at UC, through the Master Plan for Higher Education, we have created a model emulated throughout the world. It's time that model started receiving the support it deserves in the place of its birth. As my predecessor, Clark Kerr, often said, higher education should never be regarded as a cost, but rather as an investment. The university is an investment not only in an individual's well-being, but also in the public good. Public education drives a society's ability to progress and to prosper. The state's great public universities hold the key to our economic and social growth and are deserving of support by all Californians." That's UC President Mark Udoff on Twitter. And Lisa Krieger, there are a lot of people at UC Berkeley who are blaming Mark Udall, though, aren't there?
They are, although he makes an excellent point there that I'd like to underline, and that is the whole issue, which I think we as a state haven't really decided, and that is higher education a private good benefiting the student, or is it a public good benefiting all of us? If it's a private good, then, you know, the incentive or motivation is to push all the costs on to the student. If it's a public good, then it really warrants all of our support and continued support. People do blame Udoff. He had the poor luck, I guess, to arrive here from Texas exactly when things were imploding with the state budget, and he really inherited a problem I think he hadn't counted on. All that being said, I think he's taking a lot of the right steps. There was a lot of administrative redundancy and overhead that's been pared back pretty much to the bone right now. The president's office is just a fraction of what it used to be.
Was the activity last week, the trashing and breaking of windows and, rioters, I think would maybe not be too strong a word, over at UC Berkeley, has that cast a shadow over today's events in your judgment?
I don't know. Today's events were conceived back in October after the other successful protest that was specific to UC. What they wanted to do today was to broaden the mission and to CSUs, community colleges, and K-12. I mean, certainly it's not good PR, let's put it that way, and if there's any vandalism down at UC Santa Cruz, which we're beginning to hear reports of, that's not good as well. I have to speak up for our local campus here, San Jose State. They're not closing the campus. The kids are going to class. They're doing a small demonstration during lunch, and their feeling is the message they're trying to get across is keep our doors open, broaden access, and shutting the campus down for the day would send the wrong message.
Well, I just got a video last night of Angela Davis saying the campuses need to be shut down throughout the state. There's even SDS activity. It's like old times over at Diablo Valley and all that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. The base has broadened tremendously with a lot of grievances. Certainly a lot of which have merit. On the other hand, I think the funding issue is so critical that it really needs to be where people stay focused.
There are people who are saying, Jill Tucker, what we're seeing is maybe the final gasp of public education. That's kind of a very dim and grim view, to be sure, but that's what I'm hearing. I'm also hearing people saying, expressing anger about more money going to prisons and corporate write-offs and money going to wars, and so that really has to be seen in the whole picture too, does it not?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, an education in California is a constitutional right, so we're not going to see public schools shutting their doors. But I think over the last 10 years, we have spent a lot of money in this state to reform education and try to get back to where we were pre-Proposition 13. And right now, I think there's this feeling that after all this effort to boost everybody in this state, to reduce class sizes, to have trained and qualified teachers, which they've made huge progress on. And I think they feel that all that money is going to be wasted. And as a state, we've invested this money, and now we're just going to go back to worse than where we were before, right after Prop 13. And I think that's incredibly demoralizing for families and teachers and those who've worked so hard to try to build the system up over the last 10 years or so.
It's a great deal of disappointment in leadership, though, too. I mean, we were at that town hall meeting, about 1,000 people there, and when I introduced Tom Amiano, it was like a rock star, and there was a lot of certainly applause for the Democrats who were there, Leland Yee and Fiona Ma and Mark Leno. But generally, across the board, there seems to be real frustration and expression of disappointment in leadership.
Absolutely, especially around the Bay Area, where they feel that, in a state that's largely considered Democratic, that their leaders in Sacramento, who should be bullying the governor or other people to get funding for schools, have backed off and backed down in the face. When it's come toe-to-toe, they've backed off and they've blinked. And there were a lot of people in Sacramento this week challenging these legislators to not blink. And so I think, yeah, there's disappointment. Even in our San Francisco, for example, in San Francisco, they said they've been disappointed in their legislators in Sacramento. These are the most liberal of liberals in Sacramento who've supported their Democratic leadership, which has formed these sort of agreements with the governor to try to weather through this budget crisis. But I think that folks are really disappointed at all the blinking that's been going on, and they'd like to see that stop. So, yeah, they are disappointed and they're angry.
And want more spine. Lisa Krieger, what about the master plan? What do these recent budget cuts do to the promise of education in California as you see things?
The master plan, when it was conceived, sought essentially zero fees for students. There were incidental costs they'd be responsible for, but not their fees. That was never codified. It was never put into statute. So it remained a goal and a vision, but certainly nothing that the universities were required to adhere to. And I think what's happened over time is that the state was in good shape back then and was able to support pretty much 99% of the cost of education per student. The state's share per student has gone down to about 62% of the cost of a UC education, about 69% cost of a CSU education. It still pays 90% of the community college costs. State support has declined. I want to note, though, this is actually happening nationwide. Other states are suffering very similar problems, and they're taking other steps. I mean, they're actually reducing access, and that's one thing we haven't done. I mean, there was reduction in enrollment last year. The universities do not want to continue that. They want to keep their doors open to everyone, which is why higher fees were really the only way to go.
But the real burden of this, and we kind of alluded to this earlier, is on the middle class and upper middle class students, isn't it?
Exactly. Particularly the middle class. If you're eligible for financial aid and making under $70,000 a year, your fees are paid for. Middle class, there are other programs available, not so much. Higher class, they'll be paying all out of pocket significantly more. That being said, UC is an amazing value. It remains an amazing value. Even now, with the fee increases, we're in the moderate to slightly high range of public institutions. A lot of other states have much higher tuition.
Have we seen things like 30% increase in a year, though, in other states?
In the 20s. And a lot of this, I spoke with a lot of experts this week, a lot of it's about perception that their fees actually dropped in the 80s, and they crept along very slowly for a very long time, and also the perception that the education should be free, so that when you're faced with the 30%, I think that's where the sticker shock comes in. And I think families and students understandably want assurance that this isn't just going to keep continuing.
And again, we are going to continue with Lisa Krieger, higher education reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, and Jill Tucker, education writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. And again, we'll also be checking in with people periodically in different places on this day of action. And you can check in with us if you have something you'd like to contribute, question, or comment. Feel free to join us. You can join the discussion now by calling 866-733-6786. That's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or emailing forum@kqed.org. Or you can post your comment on question online. Just visit kqed.org/forum and click on the segment. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. California students, faculty, and parents, and citizens and union members all expected to come out in droves today for Day of Action, protesting state budget cuts in education. We're talking with a couple of education reporters and also checking in with some of those who will be walking out of class or hitting the streets in protest over the cuts to K-12 education and to the state's public colleges and universities. Lisa Krieger with us by phone from the South Bay as higher education reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, and Jill Tucker here in studios, education writer of the San Francisco Chronicle. And Jason Schultz is a librarian at UC Berkeley in the African American Studies Department. He's out on the picket lines. Jason Schultz joining us from the campus. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you give us a picture of what's going on there in terms of the picket lines? You are there, huh? On the picket lines?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. There's picket lines at four different locations. The main one is around Sather Gate, where there are workers and many students, and particularly students of color, that have gotten together there. Roughly about 100, 150 students are there.
And you hope what will be accomplished by the picket lines?
Sure. So, I mean, there's a multitude of issues here at stake. Today is a little bit different than what it's been at past university at UC Berkeley protests, in the sense that we're in solidarity with K-12, because those are the students and the teachers that feed into the UC, the Cal State Community College system. So with their cuts, that means that there's less access for students to be able to get to the UC, and that's particular to students of color as well.
You've mentioned students of color a couple times, and we were want to point out at the beginning of the program that poor students have actually been helped by these tuition cuts. And I wonder if you have some response to that. By the fee hikes themselves, because there's been more money available for them.
I disagree with that. At UC Berkeley, if things have gone over time, really there's only less than 15% Latino, Latina, and black students. Black students are only 3% of the population here. And they've also, as people may be aware, there's been a number of racist attacks in San Diego and elsewhere throughout the UC system. So the climate is very poor. Access to services is very poor. Support for ethnic studies or collections, like my African studies collection, which have gone down 60% over the last 5 years. So access to the diversity is really not good in the UC system.
Diversity wasn't the issue, though. I was just raising the issue of finances, because essentially the cuts have the fee increases actually have helped poorer students. There's more money for financial aid as a result. I understand your concern about diversity, but what about the fact that poor students are actually in better shape?
The thing is, there's a number of poor students that are dropped out of school, though. So I really think the high tuition, high aid model is really a fallacy in my opinion. I've not seen it here at Berkeley. And continuing, you see working students of all backgrounds are having trouble staying in colleges, and let alone get to college as well.
Lisa Krieger, can I get you on record on this again?
I think he does make a point, and I've heard this from other students, that that students of color don't apply because there is the sticker shock and the perception and the fear that the financial aid may not be there for them. Now, that's clearly a better effort needs to be done on the part of the financial aid folks to assure them that there will be support. The students coming from families who are eligible for financial aid who make under $70,000 a year will have all of their fees paid for by the university.
And Jason Schultz, are you going to be marching to downtown Oakland and joining community college students there? Is that the plan still?
As a member of AFT, we may be marching or going down through other means and joining down with the Oakland rallies, and some of us will also be down in San Francisco as well to get off the campuses and show that we're linked to the community. Because this is a fight for all of us, not just the UC system.
So you're inviting the community to join you, obviously.
Well, definitely. We are part of the community, so we want to kind of really break down the ivory tower complex that some may have. I know there's also people in Sacramento, and that's great, too. We want to, fight on all fronts as we can, locally, in Sacramento, and nationwide, because this is a nationwide action today, not just in California.
Yeah, but you're anticipating this to spread throughout the state in a big way, are you not?
It has. I mean, I've seen actions, students from CSU Channel Island, people from Chico that may be going down to Sacramento. There's actions in Texas, in Washington State, in New York. It's really a nationwide and even international movement. We have students from Japan that are here at Berkeley on the picket lines in solidarity with us.
Well, good luck to you, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Great. Thank you so much.
Jason Schultz over at the UC Berkeley campus, librarian and member of the African American Studies Department. We're going to go right to your calls here. And Robert, you're first up. Good morning. Welcome to Forum.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm the parent of two young children in the San Francisco School District. And with regard to the budget problem, I made a calculation that if there was a 10% salary cut across the board, that would solve the budget problem. And since the budget crisis appears to be largely a temporary problem due to the Great Recession, if this were implemented for 1 or 2 years, until the economy improves and things get sorted out. That would solve the problem. No teachers would need to be laid off or other support staff. No programs would need to be cut.
I don't know if you have the numbers all that available, but Jill Tucker, what about a 10% across the board? Has that even been discussed, or is that realistic?
No, I think that you would find that the teachers making, you know, depending on where they are, $40,000 a year or $50,000 a year, would not like that idea. And, you know, they're fighting already cuts that would come out of their salary, ultimately furloughs that they're talking about in San Francisco. That would be a cut in their pay, increased step and column increases, benefit delays in their step and column, and benefit decreases. So they're already talking about all that. I don't know if 10% would be enough, but I think that that would be an uphill battle to accomplish that.
Let me thank you, Robert, for the call. You remember at the middle school with that big town hall meeting, there was a gentleman toward the end that was moderating and had to do a little traffic hopping because he had long screed of a statement in which he was excoriating the superintendent for essentially having too many administrators and not cutting there, the implication being that that's where a lot of the fat was. I don't know if he got pink slip too, but how much fat are we really talking about in administration, or how lean is it really?
You know, it depends on the school district. San Francisco, I think, is between 3% and 4% is administrative. The reality is they have to have an administration because there are many requirements that have to be met. They have to have an HR department, the benefit department, payroll department. They have to adhere to federal guidelines that requires them to submit a lot of data and information. They have to have people running the technology department. And so administration, while that may sound like a bunch of people sitting behind desks pushing pencils, isn't entirely true. You need those people. They are performing necessary jobs. Can some be cut? Sure. But even if you cut the superintendent and everyone else in the central office, you wouldn't even get close to the $113 million, for example, in San Francisco that they have to cut over the next 2 years. Not even close.
Well, one thing that can't be cut is the pension money that's going out.
No, some of the main problems that education, especially K-12, has, their money has remained pretty much stagnant. They haven't gotten cost of living increases. And at the same time, however, their health and medical benefits have gone up for everyone, obviously, exponentially. So if your revenue is stagnant and you're paying 10% more, for example, in healthcare costs, and pension costs, because you have an aging teaching force that you have committed through contracts, previous contracts, that you're going to owe them lots of money after they leave the school district in both health benefits and pension. That's a lot of money that the school district has to continue paying for people who no longer work there.
We'll bring in more of your calls. And from Santa Cruz, Adam, join us. Good morning.
Hi there.
Hi.
So I just wanted to briefly address your notion that the 30% of the money was going back to poor students and would actually, like, put them in a better position. I'd like to categorically disagree with the fact that anyone's going to be in a better position, because the money that's being rerouted back to financial aid is only going to offset the 32% fee hikes that have just been imposed. The third of students that are getting that money back are simply going to not have to pay any additional fee hikes. So they're going to be in the same financial position they were in before, while two-thirds of the students are still having to deal with these fee increases.
Well, Lisa Krieger.
The administration at UC Santa Cruz, I'm sorry, at University of California, said it would offset those hikes and there'd be additional support as well for the fees. So, you know, that's the devil's in the details, and we should explore that further. I did want to make a point about reducing fees and pay of professors and teachers. I know at University of California, professors are already being recruited from other institutions elsewhere in the country, and that's scary because if we lose some of the stars that we have on our campuses, we're not getting them back.
We'll move on to your call. Joe, join us. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having my call. My question is basically, where does the cost fall compared to other states? I heard that we used to be the cheapest school or the cheapest state to get a public education, especially at the higher education level. Is that still true, or where do we fall?
Well, what are we now, roughly, Jill, in terms of K-12 public education spending, 47th or so?
47th to perhaps 50th now when you adjust for cost of living.
And what about in higher education, Lisa?
Compared to other states, we're sort of in the moderate to high range. We used to be in the low range. Now they're University of Michigan, University of Virginia. I know New York. They remain where we are, if not higher.
And Joe, I thank you for your call. On we go to Oakland. Alex, good morning.
Hi. I'd like to address the issue of this fee hike being better for people who are poor, which maybe on its own, your guest was talking about the numbers and the way the numbers work out. That could be true, but if K through 12 has larger class sizes, that disproportionately the poorer kids are going to be affected by that. I'm a college-educated, soon-to-be parent, and I live in Oakland, and the idea of sending my kid to a public school where they don't get art, they don't get PE, they could possibly be less literate than myself, that's disgusting. And the idea that a kid who's maybe next door, whose parents only have a seventh grade education, to get through to 12 and manipulate the system to get to the point where they could even apply for these subsidies, it's just a laugh. Like, once you cut class sizes, these kids will fall through the cracks.
Now, you've raised some important points, especially about art and PE, which obviously is of great concern to many. But let's talk about class size for the moment, Jill Tucker. And what's the picture there?
Well, we've spent more than $1.5 billion a year for the last dozen years or so to reduce class sizes for K through 3 down to 20 students. There's some debate over how much that has helped the system, but certainly parents and teachers love that. It allows students to get a lot more attention. It is looking like, and already is happening across the state, that that is a program that is going to have to get cut. And they're talking now of raising class sizes, not only in those K through 3 when kids are learning to read, and raising that to up to 25 or even more. And then when they get into the upper grades, to 30 kids in high school, maybe 35. So it really means that they're not getting individualized attention. And it's something that parents and teachers really want.
And again, Jill Tucker is education writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. And Ann is joining us from Martinez. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. I'd like to ask you what's going to happen in the K through 12 program for children who need special education and or alternative high school education.
What was your second half of that?
Alternative
high school?
Okay. Yeah. But let's start with special ed.
You know, special education is a federal mandate, and it is one of those things that is hard to cut. Because there are so many laws protecting those students that parents can have legal recourse to pursue what those children need. So that is a program that I don't see districts cutting. When they are talking about cutting programs, special education is virtually not mentioned at all. Alternative high school programs is something that I think has been on the radar lately. They've been talking about bringing back career and technical education. We used to call it vocational ed. We don't call it that anymore. But that's something that effort to really provide students with that course to their future, I can't see that they're going to be able to continue committing resources to that and keep on the path that they've been on, because they just simply don't have the resources to do so.
And I thank the caller. And as I said earlier, we were checking in with different people throughout this hour. Isabel Barrientos Vargas is a college student trustee at De Anza Community College in Cupertino, and she joins us from the campus there. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Just wanted to check in with you and see what's going on at De Anza. Can you give us a picture?
We have two contingents going on at De Anza. We wanted to make sure that we have as many students involved, and so far we have more or less 70% of our students involved on March 4th. More or less, around 600 students will be going to San Francisco and protesting against the budget cuts, and the other students will be staying at school along with me and be part of the teach-in that we are organizing, the march that we're organizing from De Anza College to the Cupertino City Hall, and also speak with the council members there. We will also be viewing a film to learn more about walkouts and have a celebration in the end to celebrate us both fighting for budget cuts at the end of the day. That's pretty much what's going on at our school.
Well, thank you for that report. Also, I think it's true that for you over at De Anza, like many of the campuses, and not only community college campuses, but as we've heard, UC and CSU, a great deal of concern about underprivileged and ESL students.
Absolutely. The funds are being cut, and unfortunately, for our ESL students, and that is completely unfair because we have many students who are international at our school. And so we will see what it is that we can be done to still protect those students and have them have the education they deserve.
And you hope what will come out of this, ideally?
Hopefully. We know that next year will be hard as well. It is only with this movement and having a long-term plan that things can get better.
Isabel Barrientos Vargas, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
And Isabel, again, is a college student trustee at De Anza Community College. We'll go to more of your phone calls. Marie, good morning.
Hi. I was just curious. I know that we're concerned about all the budget cuts. I'm just wondering where we expect the money to come from to solve the problem. Because obviously everybody is getting budget cuts across the state in every form. And the money has to come from somewhere. And nobody wants taxes increased. So I'm just curious where everybody wants the money to come from.
That's the big question. I'll start with you, Lisa Krieger. Where is this money supposed to come from?
Higher taxes. We're a taxophobic state, and as long as we stay that way, I can't see any more money coming. I mean, so much of the general fund budget is committed elsewhere.
There is a movement to have
some shifts in priority.
There is a movement to start, of course, a two-thirds revolt against and there's also talk about the Prop 13 loophole and parcel tax in San Francisco. I mean, people are looking for ways to generate revenue, but to some extent, the state is crying poverty here. Understandably, yes.
It is. There needs to be new ways to generate more revenue for the state, and if that involves change taxes, that's probably the most logical place to go, because I don't see it coming from our existing fund.
Agree, Jill, it has to be taxes? Or that's the most logical?
Well, obviously raising taxes or having the vehicle license fee or allowing local communities to raise parcel taxes more easily, changes to Prop 13. There's a lot of multi-prong. A lot of it is associated with that, the tax word. The governor on Monday met with education officials, and he is absolutely committed to not raising taxes. I think they're looking now that they've lost in K-12 11% below what they were getting in 2007, and they're feeling like a family. If you don't have enough means, the governor says we need to live within our means, but if a family doesn't have enough means, they go get a second job. They need more income. And I think people are thinking, not only now do we need more income, but long term. The governor is talking about creating a rainy day fund for the state so that there would be stability in the future. But that doesn't help the kids that are in kindergarten or first grade this year.
Go to some of the emails. Marcia writes, kudos to Jill Tucker for wonderful education coverage for many years. My question is about Prop 49. I feel there would be some more money for schools if we just repeal or reduce Governor Arnold's pet project, the 2002 unfunded mandate for after-school programs called Prop 49. It steals money from the school day and pretends that a few after-school activities can make up for the loss. The legislature recently tried to reduce the special fund, a smart move for a change, but the governor opposed their efforts. Now it's time to get rid of Prop 49. Why doesn't anyone talk about this?
You know, folks have tried to talk about this in the past. Prop 49 was Schwarzenegger's measure before he became governor to fund after-school programs. It passed. It means that they have to set aside this money from the state budget every year. It's a little below $1 billion, and it funds after-school programs across the state. But the governor loves what he loves, and he supports the things that he feels passionate about. And even though he doesn't like ballot box budgeting, he likes his ballot box budgeting. And so it's something that they've tried to pare back a little bit. It has been shaved a little along with everything else, but it is still a mandate and it is still funding after school programs.
And some more opinions from listeners. Here's a listener says, one way to get more funding for our schools, get the union contracts under control, as well as a ridiculous state pension system. Another listener named Colin says, I graduated from San Francisco State in December after watching the fees steadily increase every semester and even having to pay an addendum to the tuition one semester. Happy to say I made it. I would encourage California students trying to figure out how to pay for higher education to take advantage of community colleges to complete general education requirements. I know a number of UC Berkeley graduates who avoided 2 years of high tuition by taking council-recommended classes that counted toward their UC degrees. And another listener says, firefighters make ridiculous amounts of money in addition to a generous retirement package. Examine their salaries and you'll see that they make 100 to 2% more than teachers. Why is there no discussion regarding fire department cutbacks, as there are many redundant employees? I wish my comment to remain anonymous, as I have prior employment history with the SFFD. Thank you for that disclosure. But here's a question that sort of looms over today in many respects. What do they hope to accomplish, writes Jay? What do they hope to accomplish? You keep asking that, and so far I haven't heard an answer. I think it would be better to write or call Senators Feinstein and Boxer, ask to take money we're presently giving as tax breaks to corporations, and put it toward education. That should be the protesters' message. I think we have heard from a number of people what they hope to accomplish, and I think that's been clarified. Let me get some more of your calls on, and we'll go to Sandra Fell. Mike, hi.
Hi. I hear a caller called in and she wanted to know where the money would come from, and everybody's talking about taxes. What I never hear people talking about is reducing expense, looking at the city and state workers' payroll and also their benefits. If you take a look at your average employee from some of these cities, they're making, you know, close to six-figure salaries. And when you start talking about their benefits, you know, 30-40% of most city and state workers' payroll is actually going just to pay for their retirement. There's more than enough money in the state if you look at the fact that all this has increased, like, exponentially over the last 10 years, but yet the population hasn't increased to sustain this. So I take my, comments off the air. I just want to know why no one's talking about reducing the expense.
Joe Tucker.
I think they are talking about reducing expense, but they're talking about doing it now and forward. The problem is that we do have strong unions in this state across all areas of the public sector, and they made deals in the past that have created these pension systems and the benefit systems. And while they're trying to scale some of those things back, for example, many teachers in this state have lifetime health benefits until they die after they retire. That is a huge chunk of change that school districts have to spend. They don't do that anymore, but they still owe money on that. So places like Fresno, for example, are going to have, if memory serves, $1 billion over the next 30 years to pay those pensions. Those are agreements that they can't really go back on. And so while they can move forward, they're going to be spending for, you know, another generation or two to pay what they agreed to, you know, 10, 20 years ago.
Lisa Krieger, here's a listener named Catherine from UC Berkeley who says, I have to comment on something I heard just a moment ago. You pointed out that these tuition hikes have actually helped poor students by making more financial aid available to them. As a low-income first-generation college student at UC Berkeley, I'd like to clarify that. Yes, my financial aid package has increased by the amount that tuition has gone up, essentially neutralizing one side effect of the budget cuts. However, budget cuts have also meant visible cuts to services throughout the university, fewer classes available, fewer smaller discussion sections to help students with material put forward in large lecture classes, cuts to advising staff. The list goes on and on. All this just adds to the burden faced by low-income students who are less likely to be familiar with how to navigate a large university like this than are their more affluent peers. So, no, I'm not. I'm going to have to disagree that this situation helps poor students in any way. Comment, Lisa.
I think that's a good point. I mean, certainly her fees are covered. The other aspects of attending a university are under stress. So, yes, the student-faculty ratio is not what it was. The support services aren't there what it was. Of the student fee increases, one-third gets plowed back into financial aid. Two-thirds, the president's office is saying, will go back into education or instructional costs, i.e. class sizes and student services. But she's absolutely right. I mean, yes, part of it's financial aid, but there are other aspects of an education that continue to be, will be under stress.
Here's a listener named Teresa who writes, I'm eternally frustrated by protests like the one happening today. Excuse me. Nobody wants public education to be financially unstable or unable to provide services to all that seek them. However, there are so many different areas within these large bureaucratic systems where money is misspent or just plain wasted. As someone who has worked for the UC system and has been privy to the internal politics of many different departments among the UC and California public high schools, I feel that gargantuan progress could be made with better money management within the school system. Let's go to more of your calls. Johnny, join us. Hi.
Hi, Michael. My question is, I guess, for Jill Tucker, and it is, what is the maximum income someone could make and still qualify for full financial aid at a California state university, an example like San Francisco State University?
I think that's to Lisa.
I think that's to Lisa.
It is. You know, my best advice is to go to the financial aid office, because there's so many factors that influence how much aid you're eligible for. Clearly, if your family earns under $70,000, and if you have a large family and not much savings, you will be eligible for more than someone who's making significantly less and has savings and other assets. Something like, I think about a half of CSU students do get support. Obviously not full support, but I think it's something you should take your specific situation to the financial aid office and see what they can help you put together.
And good luck to you, Johnny, and good luck to this day of action. I hope that the voices are heard. There is certainly an extraordinary number of people who are participating, and the feelings are profound, to put it mildly. I want to thank Lisa Krieger, higher education reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. Lisa, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And thank you to Jill Tucker, education writer with the San Francisco Chronicle. Thank you for joining us, Jill.
My pleasure.
And thanks to all of those who joined us intermittently throughout the hour, Jason Schultz, Akasha Perez, Colby Zintel, from different campuses and from different places that are involved. And I want to also thank I think I left somebody out here, didn't I? Isabel, thank you from De Anza College. And thanks to you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you, and we appreciate your listenership. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Want to extend thanks to Senior Editor Dan Zoll, to our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our interns are Jeremy Blackman, David Carini, Julia Jackson, Alexander Park, and Mitha Srivanaj. I don't want to board her name again. Srinivasan, thank you. Also, remind you that you can also let us know what you think about what you hear on forum by calling us and our listener call-in response line at 415-553-3300. Srinivasan it is. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.